For Tuesday, voters are heading to the polls in more than a dozen states and American Samoa, and it could be make or break time for Nikki Haley. CBS's Nancy Cordes.
She says that she's looking at internal polling to decide what metrics she needs to hit. And obviously for Donald Trump, he wants her out of the race. He doesn't want to be getting hit from the right and from the left.
Some Democratic voters say they'll protest President Biden's handling of the Gaza war with uncommitted or no preference votes. Israel's leader isn't happy. One of his chief rivals is meeting with U.S. officials about ceasefire talks in Gaza. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby.
Israel has put a forward-leaning deal on the table. They have made an offer here, and the onus is on Hamas to accept it.
In suburban Detroit, one person, a 19-year-old, has now died in a massive industrial fire in Clinton Township. CBS News Brief. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. More than 1,400 pages of newly released documents show how two lawyers from Wisconsin tried to overturn President Biden's 2020 victory in the state. James Troupas and Kenneth Chesbrough turned over the records yesterday to settle a lawsuit. The papers show how they put together slates of fake electors in Wisconsin and six other battleground states. Today is Super Tuesday. Voters in 15 states and American Samoa should put President Biden and Donald Trump closer to their party's nominations. Biden surrogate Malcolm Kenyatta tells WISN-TV's Up Front he's not concerned the president is losing in battleground states.
Whether it's Wisconsin or Michigan or Pennsylvania, you know, these are states that have always been close.
Wisconsin is one of a handful of states expected to decide the winner in November. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. The city's progress and prospects were themes of Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson's State of the City speech yesterday. Johnson set a goal of expanding Milwaukee's population to 1 million and discussed strategies like lead service line replacements to enhance water safety. He also voiced support for the Housing Authority amidst scrutiny. Johnson said additional funds are needed for safety measures before the Republican National Convention. The speech saw Johnson praise public safety efforts like traffic calming projects and a reduction in crime rates compared to last year. Some Waukesha voters have new voting locations. Changes include relocating the St. Mary's polling place to the public library, moving the St. John Newman location to the Bridge Church, and shifting St. William's voters to the Northview building. Election officials say a postcard delivered in the mail will assist voters in identifying their polling station on site. And that's what you need to know. I'm Stuart J. Waddles, WAUK News.
Matt Nair on air.
Hovde, Eric Hovde now. He will be running against Tammy Baldwin.
He's not a Wisconsinite. He threw his hat in the ring from California. This is Tim Michaels all over again. Businessman who walks in and goes, well, I can take care of this. And Wisconsin says, no. Good to know you. Here's some Kringle. Go back home.
Is that how we politely blow people off now? Is to take a Kringle and go away.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Huge win at home for the Bucks. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks beat the LA Clippers 113-106 at Fiserv Forum, and they did it without Giannis or Chris Middleton, both out with injuries. The Bucks were down by 13, but made changes on defense. Doc Rivers.
We went zone a lot in the second half. We switched everything. You know, maybe their timing was off because of the zone. I thought it did help. For sure. And then I thought our execution offensively was unbelievable down the stretch. We got the ball. When they trapped, we moved the ball. We kept the game simple.
College basketball, Marquette drops to number 8 in the AP Top 25 after losing to Creighton. The Badgers did not receive a single vote after being ranked number 6 just a month ago. They host Rutgers Thursday. Are they concerned?
No, because this league is hard. This is one of the better teams in the country. You know, we got enough that we have to continue to try to get better at that'll help us going forward. So right now, it's all about Rutgers and getting ready for that.
That's Badgers head coach Greg Gard with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Mostly cloudy and still windy this morning. The wind will die down and we'll actually see a little sunshine here by this afternoon. High today, 44. Tonight, partly cloudy, 35. Tomorrow, sunshine, 45 by Thursday, partly cloudy with a high near 46. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp now 37.
RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Southeast Wisconsin informed, engaged, and entertained.
This is The Shaw,
540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK.
Mercy and mercy.
You know, such a smooth guy, right?
Things ain't what they used to be.
No.
Make them like they used to be. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah. And if you listen to the lyrics, man, they're right on par with where we are today. Listen to these.
Oil wasted on the oceans and upon our seas, fish full of mercury.
And this was 1967. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789.
So in 1967, Earl, I was in New York in graduate school. And every summer in New York, we all had the pleasure of smelling garbage because
they didn't have anywhere to put it.
No. The garbage men would go on work. They didn't go on strike. They just did kind of walkouts. And they did it in the summer because they knew exactly what would happen. So the whole city of New York smelled basically like garbage all summer. It's
clearly been memorable for you.
Yeah. That's what I remember. I think that song probably must have been a summer song.
Yeah, it was a summer song.
Yeah, there was that. That's what brought it back.
All factory memories. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. I guess we got a guy who's been hanging on since the last subject. I guess he's called back. It's David from Mequon. David, go ahead.
Good morning, Earl. Good morning, Sandy. I just have a question for Sandy. This is directed towards him. So you bring up the child care and, you know, we should be figuring out a way with that. And people are like, well, how are we going to pay, you know, how are people able to pay for electricity and housing costs? Well, we already have energy assistance. We already have food stamps, which almost 100 million people are on. We already have essentially, you know, basically other things are paid for by other individuals that are going towards low-income people as it is. So at the end of the day, again, who is going to pay for all that additional expense? Because we already pay for a lot of things for low-income people.
Like what?
Well, wait a minute. Dave listed some things, although I think he was only facetious about saying 100 million people were on food stamps, because you understand, Dave, that's almost a third of the country, which can't be the case. And if it is the case, then that's further proof that there's something terribly wrong with our economy if 100 million people in this country are qualified to receive food assistance. But number one, this isn't a handout. Like public schools aren't a handout. If you viewed child daycare as a necessity, and if you understood that almost every family in America involves two breadwinners, regardless of their income status, actually, it's become the norm in America for both breadwinners, for a family to have two breadwinners, those people will experience child daycare costs. And you can talk to families that earn $200,000 a year who have children, and I guarantee you that their first line of discussion will be the cost they bear for child daycare, because the average is 11. But if you reach for higher quality daycare, you can spend $15,000, $20,000, $25,000 a year for daycare a year. So, you know, child daycare isn't a handout, number one, and it's not something that would be aimed solely at low-income people. And I think your discussion of this is the difference in thought process between those who view, for instance, healthcare and education and child daycare as a community necessity and not something that is a handout to low-income people. So it's just a difference in a value judgment about what it is that is daycare and what it is that is public education, because I presume you don't think public education is a handout to low-income people.
And I would say this before Dave responds. You know, I'm a taxpayer as well, and I don't look at things from the perspective of we can't afford to help people. The need is there. And so what do? So people who can't afford to pay child care, then it means they can't work. If people have children, and there's no law against having children, and it shouldn't be punitive, Sandy. Well, you had a child, and so we as a society, we're going to leave you there to flounder. The children grow up, Sandy. The children grow up to become adults, and then we complain about the violence, and we complain about all the trouble. I don't understand why we don't do all we can in the early stages to deal with this issue before it becomes a major one. Dave?
Again, I just look at it from the standpoint that we keep figuring out, okay, well, we have to do this for this individual and this for that individual. And before you know it, everybody's on the dole. Everybody's getting a tax credit or some sort of, you know, cash payment towards.
Hey David, everybody's.
What I'm saying is, Earl, all I'm saying is this, is that adds to additional debt, and that additional debt, like we're going to have a referendum in the city of
Milwaukee,
the public schools.
Dave, right? We got you. Thank you very much for the call. But I want to push back again when you talk about everybody's on the dole. You know, there's been, as Sandy talked about, you know, Donald Trump and others, major tax cuts. There are so many people who are skirting their duty to pay their taxes. Wealthy people who are paying little or no taxes, corporations paying little or no taxes. And you want to talk about people being on the dole. Let's go back to the text line. Child care is an investment. The community and economy benefits greatly. It's not just wasting money.
That's the point. I mean, it's a value judgment, and the discussion needs to be, you need to talk about the values first to understand the difference in opinion. So from David's standpoint, he hasn't reached the notion that child daycare is, from a value standpoint, is valuable to the community and needs to be supported in some fashion by the community. And it isn't that it's necessarily born or supported solely by the community. First of all of the people who will get the benefit of tax care are taxpayers, presumably, at some level. Now, with a progressive tax system and with progressive policies, they might not pay the full cost of the daycare for their children, but wealthy taxpayers well might.
Let's go to Stephen from Green Bay. Good morning to you, Stephen. You say what, sir?
Good morning, gentlemen. First of all, regarding the song, isn't it amazing how everything changes and nothing changes all at the same time? And to talk about child care, I really get frustrated when people on the right start saying that certain things like food stamps and things like that are handouts.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I was one of those people growing up that wouldn't have had a meal on the table if it wasn't for food stamps. And I think it's a little insensitive because it's not just adults that are taking advantage of this program. It is little kids that need nourishment to grow and learn that are also taking advantage of these programs. And they can't help it that their parents can't make ends meet. It's not their fault, but at the end of the day, they still need to eat. And I think it's their responsibility to make sure that happens. And to sort of call it a handout and make it sound like it's just a bunch of people being lazy, not doing anything, just, you know, accepting government dollars is not only false, but it completely disintegrates the help that people need and people use on a daily basis. And it just frustrates me greatly, Earl.
Hey, I think that's well said, Stephen. No question. Very well said. Let's go to Tom quickly. Again, Tom, quickly.
Well, let me just correct the night because I decided to look up Dave's number. It turns out that about 12.5% of the total U.S. population qualifies for SNAP, which is the food support program, which constitutes 41.2 million people or 21.6 million households. So that's an unfortunately large number, but it's a long ways from 100 million people.
Yeah, and again, Sandy, what are we talking about? They're not giving people filet mignon and lobsters. It is offering nutritional in many instances now because they made the adjustments, food to people who normally wouldn't get it. Tom from L.A., quickly.
Yes, it is Republicans' policies that make us more dependent on we, the people, collectively government. Republicans spend, Democrats invest. Tax cuts for billionaires and the military-industrial complex are two places that we could actually cut out and would actually bring money back to us. And also, when it comes to the food stamps, that's coming from the farm bill. So when you cut the food stamp program, you're cutting the farm bill as well. So these people just need to start getting – I mean, I don't understand why it is that they don't get it. It's very, very easy. Invest in our future. Invest in education. Invest in our children. And you know what? You'll have a better society instead of them coming out later and saying, oh, crime and this and that. It's your policies that keep on making it where the middle class can't make it.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy, this connects our next conversation, our next subject is going to connect to the last one. 844-967-2789. Congress can't seem to solve its spending problem. We need a fiscal commission now. You know, and a lot of times what, you know, Dave and others are talking about is we can't afford to keep this debt going. Well, you got to look at it then from planning on how to address it. 844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
Shaw, W-A-U-K, Waukesha's home for Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Most of us can agree we should have the freedom to make our own medical decisions. Politicians should have no role at all, but not California mega millionaire Eric Hovde. Hovde said, I am totally opposed to abortion, and I'm 100% pro-life. And he supported overturning Roe v. Wade, the court case that protected abortion rights. Hovde's been supported by Wisconsin Right to Life, an extreme anti-abortion group that supports banning abortion, even in cases of rape and incest, and threatens doctors and nurses with criminal charges for providing abortion care. With views like that, Hovde could be a crucial vote in favor of a national abortion ban, letting politicians decide what's right for women. Call Eric Hovde at his California office at 714-730-4444. Tell him his position on abortion is dangerous for Wisconsin women. Paid for by A Better Wisconsin Together, Inc.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK.
The Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesdays. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams, and a robust debate has broken out this morning. And so, but that's what we're looking for. You know, you can join us at any time at 844-967-2789. Sandy, Congress can't seem to solve its spending problem. We need a fiscal commission now. And let me read this first paragraph. This is in The Hill this morning. The Congressional Budget Office recently released its 10-year budget and economic projections, and the outlook appears dismal. After years of warnings about the growing unsustainability of our debt, the CBO now projects that we are hitting a tipping point. Even using the most conservative measurement, $27 trillion, our debt will exceed the size of our entire economic output GDP next year and will grow to over 170% of GDP in three decades. CBO also projects the annual deficits will surpass and stay above $2 trillion after 2031. Sandy, what are they talking about? It sounds frightening.
Well, in fact, what happened this year was that the debt did exceed the GDP. Gross domestic product, and you know, there is that is an unusual circumstance
for those of us who don't understand what the gross domestic
gross domestic product is, a measurement of our total economy. So the national debt now exceeds the annual national economy number, and so you know that says that the overhang of our debt is more substantial than it was 15 or 20 years ago, when it was simply a percentage less than 50% of our national debt, of our national GDP.
It doesn't mean we're bankrupt.
No, it does not mean we're bankrupt, and it doesn't mean we can't support it, but it does mean that it's growing and it's trending upward. And at some point, you know, something that trends upward, on the long term reaches a point where it can no longer be sustained. So I personally have a view that the beneficiary of this ignoring of the national debt notion, the ignoring of our annual deficits, the beneficiaries of that have actually been Republicans, have been conservatives, the people who have cut taxes in the face of a national deficit, who have continued to expend money in the direction of our national defense at a growing level, exceeding our inflation rate of growth in the face of a deficit. You know, when you can ignore the deficit, you can spend money in ways that maybe Tom, Dick, and Mary don't like, but it's just the deficit, okay? But if we were going to be taxed to support it, then I think there would be a great deal more concern. We wouldn't have tax cuts coming left and right. Taxes might go up in some years in order to address the level of expenditure, and our level of expenditure would more likely be prioritized in a manner that met the needs of the voters of this country.
You know, Sandy, 4 years ago, Donald Trump was the president, maybe even 5 years ago, I remember having a conversation with you when Donald Trump was talking about tax cuts.
That was 6 years ago.
6 years ago. And you said tax cuts in the middle of an expanding economy or something to that degree.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I said it was pouring gasoline on the fire.
That's what you said.
It was an unnecessary thing. It was unnecessary. It did increase the deficits. You know, the numbers that the economy was achieving probably weren't even affected that much because the economy was very robust and was trending in the right direction. And it has continued to trend in the right direction, you know, under Biden. But, you know, there's no question that those tax cuts were, one, unnecessary, and two, increased the deficit. In fact, I think there have been those who have measured it who have said that if those tax cuts had not occurred, our deficits today would be substantially smaller than they are today, and we would be headed in the direction, actually, of not worrying about the national debt as much as we are.
So this is the Congressional Budget Office. These unprecedented deficits are being driven by both, not just spending, because all you hear from the Republicans is spending, driven by both increased spending and stagnant revenues.
Right.
Which is what you've been harping on over and over and over. As a percentage of GDP, though spending plays a much greater role, revenue is set to fall by about 2.1% percentage points as a share of GDP over the 34-year window from 2000 to 2034. However, spending will increase by 6.5 percentage points driven by health care and retirement benefits. So health care and retirement benefits, you can't prevent those. Those are things that are going to happen, right? I mean, no matter how you try to cut it, those things are going to increase.
Well, I think so. I think our society would be close to collapse if we didn't have those things, right? People call them entitlements, but they can be modified to the point where they don't have quite the same effect, okay? They could be modified to have, number one, to remove the ceiling on the income that is subject to paying for them. And two, they could be adjusted so that the wealthy would not receive them, okay, or would pay more taxes out of them. You know, there are adjustments that can be made. So the problem with those kind of forecasts is they are based on a static concept of what the law is. And I think that if we were to start focusing on moving in the direction of reducing our deficits by increasing revenues and then adjusting how we spend our money based on priorities, that we could get back to an agenda that would probably have no problem paying for child daycare because of the importance that people would place on it, far above the importance that is being placed on some of the other things which are being financed out of a deficit, meaning it's in disregard for how much it costs.
Well, certainly people should be alarmed. You know, Sandy, 40 years ago, maybe the deficit was $2 trillion, or maybe it was not even $1 trillion.
No, you're talking about the national debt.
Yeah, the national debt.
Yeah.
It was not even $1 trillion. And here it is 40 years later, and we're talking about these numbers, so clearly it's an issue, right?
Well, it is an issue. And, you know, the fact is that it's trending upward as a percentage of GDP, and that is the issue, okay? If it keeps trending upward as a percentage of GDP, at some point, our GDP can't support it. GDP is essentially all the revenue stream in this country that can be used to pay the taxes to support our expenditures in government. And so you know, we need to look at it. And the fact is that the reason why politicians can't seem to get a hold of it is they're deficit junkies. And I would accuse the Republicans of being at least as deficit junky as the Democrats because of the way they have, for instance, cut taxes in the face of deficits and otherwise taken steps which reduce revenue and increase deficits.
You know, opinion piece, Minnesota is proof that Wisconsin Republicans have been dead wrong in a direction that we'll talk about. 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. You're tuned into a Tuesday edition of the Earl Ingram Show. Up next, news, weather, and sports. We'll be right back.
Pacific Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Recent rainy weather has somewhat lowered the risk of wildfires in Wisconsin. The Department of Natural Resources says most of the state's midsection is at a low level of danger, while southern and eastern Wisconsin are still at high risk. 138 wildfires have burned about 300 acres of land in Wisconsin already this year. March is National Reading Month. Wisconsin librarians say kids read books if they like the topics and the formats, like graphic novels for preteens.
It is a lot of dialogue. Sometimes there's some context, you know, paragraphs and stuff in there, but it gives kids that visual, and sometimes they need that to keep going.
Blaze Burton works at the Mercer Library. He says kids respond better when teachers and parents take an informal approach. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WAUK News, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. Investigators are on the lookout for a specific car and the disappearance of the three-year-old in Manitowoc County. Two Rivers police are urging people to review their security cameras for any recordings of a 1997 four-door Nissan Altima. It's got Wisconsin plates that starts with an A and ends with an O. The car is suspected to have been seen the day before three-year-old Elijah Vu went missing. More people are opting for Milwaukee's downtown streetcar with a 30% uptick in ridership last year. The growth is primarily linked to the comeback of office workers and summer festivals. The upcoming launch of daily service on the lakefront line in April is set to drive continued growth. There could still be some high water in areas this morning. The weather system shifted to heavy rain and some hail, resulting in flooding in low-lying areas. And that's what you need to know. I'm Stuart J. Waddles, WAUK News.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating without a compass, eyes waiting, started to wonder. Metamorphosis, philosopher you thought you is.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Beat with the 60-second showbiz beat. Ty Burrell is alive and well. It was confirmed at the SAG Awards last week when the cast of Modern Family showed up to present the ensemble in a comedy series award to this year's winner, The Bear. To get the Modern Family actor to show up, Jesse Ferguson, who played Mitchell Pritchett, called Burrell himself and urged him to be there. Ferguson told Burrell he needed to make an appearance because fans had heard rumors that he might have died. Burrell played Phil Dunphy on the show, which ran on ABC for 11 seasons. Jimmy Kimmel Live host Jimmy Kimmel came to the defense of comedian and Golden Globe MC Joe Coy. Kimmel feels Coy should get another chance at hosting the Golden Globes. Kimmel argued that the embattled comic got the gig at this year's Golden Globes just a few days beforehand and took a lot of flack for going after people in the room. Kimmel says Coy is funny and learned his lessons and would do well if given a second chance. Here's a good lesson. If you want writers to create funny jokes for you, don't tell them their jokes stink in front of a national audience. At least he didn't get slapped by Will Smith. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, every night between 7 and 9 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mostly cloudy and still windy this morning. The wind will die down and we'll actually see a little sunshine here by this afternoon. High today 44. Tonight, partly cloudy 35. Tomorrow, sunshine 45 by Thursday, partly cloudy with a high near 46. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp now 37.
The Todd Almost Show.
Green Bay's a fine town, but I'm just telling you, you're better off to take a horse. Don't drive in Green Bay, and for God's sake, don't get a parking ticket. So how about this? We find out how much revenue does Green Bay get from parking tickets, and we say that the Packers are going to donate that, and we're going to have free parking in Green Bay. How about that? Todd for mayor of Green Bay.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Your home of the Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings from 8 till 10 on The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM WAUK.
Somewhere out there, beneath the pale moonlight, some.
Somewhere out there, someone saying a prayer that we'll find one another in that big somewhere out there. And even though I know how very far apart we are, it helps to think we might be wishing on the same bright star.
And when the night wind starts to sing a lonesome lullaby, it helps to think we're sleeping underneath the same big sky.
Man, it's just a beautiful, beautiful song.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, appeals court blocks Florida Stop Woke Act, says it's a First Amendment sin. A three-judge panel upheld a previous ruling that said the state law violates private companies' rights to freedom of speech and expression. So it's so help me understand, because it referred to private companies' freedoms. It didn't say citizens.
No, well,
did I miss something?
Well, companies, you know, speech is speech, okay? And one of the problems we have with Citizens United is the way they gave corporations rights with respect. They decided that speech included money and politics, and it all got very convoluted, and they decided that money from flowing from corporations was a form of speech. But speech, words, is our words, you know, and we have freedom of speech. And the notion that a state could legislate restrictions on things that can be considered by corporations, I suspect, you know, the pronouns and all of the things that are considered woke that are apparently upsetting to other people. First of all, it's unusual to me or surprising to me that people get so concerned about what other people are doing, thinking, and saying. That's kind of my scratch my head issue associated with all these social issues, because it all involves sort of the public meddling with what individuals are deciding to do and think. And that's the kind of stuff that our Constitution was designed to protect, to allow individuals to do and think things that might not be altogether popular, but are certainly permissible under the freedom of speech concept. And so I'm pleased to see this, but and relieved. But it's surprising to me that folks who talk all the time about the Constitution and wanting to protect the Constitution decide to protect the Constitution by violating it, you know, by doing things that are obviously contrary to what was contemplated in the Constitution, and freedom of speech and freedom of religion being two of the primary ones.
You know, Sandy, in this instance, a federal appeals court on Monday upheld a ruling that blocked Florida from enforcing a law backed by Governor Ron DeSantis that restricts how private companies teach diversity and inclusion in the workplace. So Wisconsin is certainly right out front with that, and many other states likewise. And this is certainly going to the United States Supreme Court. There's no question.
I would guess it will. You know, I suspect that right now this is the kind of thing that would go on what's called certiorari, meaning that the Supreme Court would have to decide that they were interested in taking the case. But I suspect that they would decide they were interested because of the nature of the widespread social aspects of it. And there undoubtedly could be competing decisions along the way. Some other court of appeals might decide it differently, although I hasten to think that they shouldn't.
Well, so a three-judge panel in the U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit ruled Monday that the Stop Woke Act exceeds the bounds of the U.S. Constitution's First Amendment right to freedom of speech and expression in its attempts to regulate workplace training on race, color, sex, and national origin. The appeals court upheld a federal judge's August 22 ruling that said the same. This is, Sandy, a topic that has been gaining steam and been one of the top planks for Republicans in the last 6 months to a year that they felt they had to prevent and that they had to stop?
Well, it's a shiny object. It's another one of those social issues that doesn't really matter to Tom, Dick, and Mary, but it does seem to excite the juices of a political base. For what reason, I don't quite understand, because it strikes me as the complete meddling by the government in the conduct of private individuals. And it also is troublesome because it seems to be one that is primarily premised on the race issue.
Let's go to Bill from O'Connor. Good morning to you, Bill. Your thoughts?
You guys got a great topic of discussion, as always. I'd like to see more of that brought out in public debates with some people who really can debate both sides. But when I heard that Supreme Court ruling about Donald Trump, I thought to myself, now you guys are going to correct me if I'm wrong, our culture is eroding away from diplomacy, honesty, integrity, and the Constitution to something a lot less than a democracy.
So, Bill, you've got a bad phone line callback. You know, Sandy, and I guess he's right. What he's talking about is the fact that Donald Trump, the 14th Amendment clause.
Well, you know, to be honest with you, I think that the Supreme Court did the right thing. And I think the liberals, it was a unanimous decision. I think that the writing of the decision, I would agree with the dissenters the ones who wrote concurring opinions, who were suggesting that the majority had gone too far in the way they wrote the decision. But I do think that you can't have each state deciding this, all right? And it is fraught with the risk that states could decide what an insurrection was. An insurrection against the United States is probably something to be resolved by Congress. It does mean that a Congress, which is paralyzed, would be asked to decide this, and it's altogether unlikely that they could even reach a decision, which would mean that they would decide that he was eligible, because in order to disqualify him, Congress would have to vote that he was disqualified from the ability to hold office. But, I think that the electorate is the one that bothers me the most. And I think that Bill is right that if Donald Trump were to get elected, it would be clear to me that our electorate is decided to turn its back on democracy.
You know, Sandy, I thought that the decision was kind of based on the fact. Now, I don't know. You're the attorney. I thought it was based on the fact that states can't tell the federal government who should be eligible for federal positions.
No, I don't think that's quite the case. Although I think what they said was, well, I think it really came down to the fact that If states were allowed to, first of all, states are allowed to regulate the vote in their state. And so the question of who is allowed on the ballot could be subject to state restrictions. But the notion that
for federal positions?
Well, sure. The way the electoral college is elected is up to the state, and we found that out. To our surprise, that actually states wouldn't even have to have a popular election to select their electoral college delegates, possibly. At least that's a possibility. I think the primary leg of the decision was that they couldn't let 50 states decide, that each state could decide differently and they could have a different basis for deciding what an insurrection was, and that it just was untenable.
So people will read into it what they will. I know Donald Trump clearly read into it something completely different than what it really was. It was vindication for him, is the way he saw it. But you clearly are pointing out.
Well, they didn't reach any conclusion about whether what was done was an insurrection or not. They simply said it's not up to the state of Colorado to decide whether he is not allowed on the ticket.
You know, Sandy, after all of these things, the Supreme Court also made a decision, United States Supreme Court, that in Texas with Governor Abbott, that, police can't just arrest migrants.
Well, they didn't.
They challenged it.
They didn't decide that. What happened was the Biden administration challenged the the Texas law, and the court, the Supreme Court, took the case, and they put a stay on Texas's right to enforce their law pending a decision by the Supreme Court. So
what does that mean for the average? What do we understand?
What it means is they put it on hold. They said, you can't, it's a new law. You can't enforce it until we've had a chance to decide whether it's constitutional or not.
So as of now, they can't arrest the people? Is that
right.
What you're saying?
As of now, they cannot arrest people, and they won't be able to arrest people unless and until the Supreme Court rules that it is constitutional.
Let me ask you, because Governor Abbott is a guy who's looking to buck the federal government. He's kind of had it with the federal government. What happens if he continues?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Texas has had this kind of lone ranger kind of approach to things. And the electric industry, they made it, they purposefully made sure that no electric transmission line in Texas connected with a transmission line from any other state, so that they were not in the interstate flow of electricity. And they did that so they would not be subject to federal jurisdiction under the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission for anything, okay? And you know what happened? A couple of years ago, they had a very cold winter. Yeah. They had a lot of problems, and the lack of any interconnection caused Texas's electric system to collapse, okay? That was the result of their decision to stand separate from the rest of the country. I'm simply using that as an analogy. I think Scott's decision or view that he can operate Texas as an independent sovereign nation, you know, sovereign from the United States, isn't going to work, and Texas doesn't really want to be separate. It shouldn't want to be separate.
Well, you know, Sandy, Governor Abbott has clearly, you know, it's similar to what Governor, the guy in Florida.
Scott.
Well,
no, DeSantis.
DeSantis.
Yeah.
They're kind of, you know, one and the same. They're kind of thumbing their noses at the federal government.
Well, the Republican Party is a party that, you know, the Trump platform is essentially running against government, running against the federal government, running against the deep state, running against, okay? And so this is just a manifestation of that. Now, Texas is in a particularly, it's in the eye of the storm in terms of immigration. And so I can understand the Texas governor's desire to do it. Although my understanding, based on testimony and news from Texas, is that many cities that are on the border are not as troubled by the immigration as it would seem, based on the Governor Scott's conduct.
844-967-2789 is the number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. You can join us.
Listening to the Shaw WAUK, Waukesha's home for Up North News Radio.
Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected to your local community. Here's Terry Barr with the Civic Media Radio Network.
If it seems you are being asked to donate pretty often these days, Lisa Schiller with the Wisconsin Better Business Bureau says you probably are, and she's hearing from residents about it.
They're getting aggressive calls. They're getting mailers in the mail asking for donations, and they want to know where their money is going.
Schiller says ask questions and understand the difference between a political action committee 527 and a nonprofit charity.
You have to really pay attention to name confusion, use of the words police and firefighter, veterans, cancer. The name of the organization does not necessarily mean that the charity is engaged in these issues. And I think that's the important thing to remember.
Find more information at BBB.org. Until next time, I'm Terry Barr.
The Shaw, WAUK.
Welcome back to the last few minutes of the Tuesday edition of the Earl Ingram Show. My co-host Sandy Williams has been doing what Sandy does.
What is that?
Hey, man, answering the tough questions, and educating us on how, you know, the government, it's not an easy thing to understand, right? I mean, we talk about the government, but it's so complex, and the laws of governing a nation like ours, it's complex, and so citizens don't know.
It's complex, and I think politicians have done their best in the last while to dumb it down, and to dumb it down into the notion of just one line, you know, the things that can be repeated on TV quickly, and that can be talked about on an elevator, and all of that is a disservice, because we need to become knowledgeable, and then we need to assert our interests, and that's the problem. And I would assert that deficits have and the willingness of our government to simply finance wars on deficits has made us more inclined to be involved with them. If we had been worried about the deficit during the 20 years of the Afghan conflict, I'm pretty sure we wouldn't have been there for 20 years. We wouldn't have spent $1 trillion of our taxes in the manner that we did in the Mideast.
So, Sandy, let me ask you, because I understand that the citizens of this nation are frustrated. You know, that includes me. I don't like how things have been going, and worse yet, I don't like this. You're going to do it our way. And, you know, everything else be damned. You're going to do it our way. And it just puts the nation in a rocky, rocky situation that is only getting worse by the day. Yeah, we're still struggling. You can't even come up with a budget, Sandy. I mean, there's no compromise with people who want to demand that we cut spending and then at the same time give us more tax breaks. It just makes no sense whatsoever. And yet there are people who buy into those things when it's nonsensical.
Well, you know, incidentally, the arrangement that kept the government going just a couple of months, just a
short term,
involved more tax breaks,
yeah,
as well as the compromise that solved the problem for the time being. So, yeah, I mean, all of that, you know, I think that the elimination of conscription and moving to a volunteer military has caused us to become more remote from our foreign policy decisions. And similarly, our willingness to finance things on deficits has made us less inclined to worry about what those things are. So tax reductions are financed on deficits, and our foreign adventures are financed on deficits. And we've just lost contact with our budget. We've lost contact with the priorities of Tom, Dick, and Mary.
You know, Sandy, our nation dropped 38,000 prepared meals. in Gaza.
Gaza.
38,000.
You know what made me worry about that is 38,000 sounded like just enough to cause people to
kill each other
over the meals, because they have a million people in need of food, and 38,000 struck me as a really small number.
They showed some signs of emaciated people on the news, Palestinian people on yesterday, and I'm watching, and my wife, we're watching these kids, and they're emaciated, and we know that they haven't been eating, so we know a famine is there. And Vice President Kamala Harris is there. Sandy, you know, if we can drop 38,000, what we need to be dropping is millions, right?
Yeah.
We have the capacity to do that, right?
Well, I think we do. It struck me that 38,000 was more of a
symbolic
act than it was anything else. And it's just a horrible situation. And I worry for Israel, actually, because I'm just worried that Netanyahu is overplaying their hand and playing a hand that is going to make it more difficult for them to exist peacefully in the future.
You know, 38,000 meals. And then there's still plans. What's the name of the other township?
Rafah.
They've got plans to move into Rafah.
Well, they've done a little bit already. And Rafah is right on the Egyptian border. And there's something called the Rafah Gate, which is the border line between Egypt and Gaza. And Egypt is in the process of sealing the Rafah Gate to make it impossible for Gazans to move through the gate into Egypt. So, you know, the Gazans are bottled up. They are simply bottled up in this very small geographic territory, and they've been pushed south like a herd, and they have now butted up against the south end of Gaza from which they can't escape.
And the only thing that can clearly save them is our government.
Well,
there
needs to be a ceasefire. And there needs to be a long-term solution. And I just am sorry that when I hear Bibi Netanyahu talk about the fact that there can be, in his mind, not a two-state solution, because that strikes me as simply stating that there is no solution.
All right. We got to leave it there. That's Tuesdays. Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. He'll be back on Friday. Thank all of you who made the show go. Thank you, Calvin. Could not have done it without you. Thank all of you who text and all of you who call, and more than that, all of you who took the time out to listen. Up next, Jane Matinere, Greg Bach. Matinere on air.
Waukesha, home of Les Paul, our awesome farmers market, and The Shaw, 540 AM and 101.1 FM, WAUK. Matt Nair on air.
Hovde, Eric Hovde now. He will be running against Tammy Baldwin.
He's not a Wisconsinite. He threw his hat in the ring from California. This is Tim Michaels all over again. Businessman who walks in and goes, well, I can take care of this. And Wisconsin says, no. Good to know you. Here's some Kringle. Go back home.
Is that how we politely blow people off now? Is to take a Kringle and go away.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. You're listening to The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. This could be a make-or-break day for the presidential candidates. Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders cast her ballot for her former boss in